Are you wearing a hat with football leather on it?
Yes.
That's like actual football?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about this hat.
It's from you. Yeah. Oh, it's from like, I think it was my dad had it made in like the 90s.
You know, people can't see you necessarily on a podcast.
Oh, I just turned my head around.
It's like a new medium.
It's audio only. My dad had these hats made in the 90s. It's got football Velcro in the back, the closure in the back, and then on the brim too. I'll be honest, for when he first had them made and I was a younger fellow, I was like, these are the dumbest hats.
Probably when we first met.
Yeah, but now I think it's pretty awesome.
I had no idea it was that old.
I like it. It's cool.
Your dad does those fun, I've done some videos in his office and he likes the football leather for good reason. It's, you know, your biggest product, right? Yes, that massive desk chair that needs a little. I need to talk to your dad because maybe you'll hear it here first. He needs to like oil the hinges on the chair. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he was out of town, and I went and I just sat at his desk for a second to do something, and I almost fell over. He needs
a little bolt. Tightening.
I think we might need to gift him a new football chair. And maybe put that one into the archives. The leather actually looks fine. That's like everything else. That's, you know, as you'd expect, everything else is falling apart.
That's a testament to the leather. Well, let's start the show. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I could get sick of that. But I'm certain I will.
I think the intro music is pretty good without David Lee Roth.
All right. Well, welcome to Full Grain Podcast. I'm Phil Callis with co-host here, Nick Horween. And today we're going to talk about a couple really interesting topics. The first topic is the namesake of the show. We're going to talk about full grain leather and what it is. And after that, we wanted to have a segment of the show that's sort of dedicated to news and noteworthy things happening in the leather and the leather adjacent world, perhaps. And the thing we're going to talk about happened about a year ago, and we weren't a show then, but I think it's important enough to bring it up again. So we're going to be talking about J.R. Rendenbach going out of business, or actually closing down. They didn't go out of business. Without reading our little notes here, Nick, tell me what full grain leather is.
So there's a bunch of different kinds or ways to describe leather. Full grain, I mean, really just means leather that has not had anything done to the very surface of it. So the grain where the hair was growing out of. So the grain, which is the pores or the hair holes, nothing has been done to smooth them out or get rid of them or cover them up. So generally speaking, full grain leather is the most, or can be the most expensive because it requires the cleanest, best raw material. Because you're not using anything to cover up imperfections or anything else that might be there that whoever's using the leather wouldn't want in the finished product.
I thought I knew the answer to what full grain is. Are you implying that the finishing method has to do with the character of the grain? Because you're talking about covering it up.
I mean, you could take something that's full grain crust that's really nasty and make it patent if you wanted to. I mean, so you could completely cover the grain up. With a rubber coating or a polyurethane coating. And then, I mean, I guess technically it's still full grain underneath that coating. But
it's irrelevant.
It's not. Why? There's no grain anymore. So it's a little bit of it kind of be splitting hairs there a little bit. But that's just the way I was kind of thinking about it.
For me, calling something full grain kind of means like it's the most naturally appearing leather that you can get. And when I think about full grain leather, I think about the hair holes a bit. Is that something that you relate to?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's because grain, you talk about grain character, and grain character is different depending on the hide type. Like, you know, bison, the grain is a lot more pronounced and a lot coarser than something like steer hide. And then you get even finer grain character when you go to calf because the hair is, you know, finer, the smaller diameter the hair itself. So the holes are smaller. So the grain gets finer. So that's kind of what's defining the characteristics of the grain.
When I think about it too, I kind of visualize like the surface of the moon or something, where there's these little craters, which would be the analogy to the hair holes of the grain. And by correcting the grain, which is the opposite of full grain, you sort of sand down the like peaks of those craters to make the crater itself less deep. That's how I sort of envision it. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, I think that there are degrees of correcting. I mean, because you're, so like you said, correcting is sanding. So you're using sandpaper to affect the surface. I mean, you can do the grain side, or you can do the suede side, the flesh side, and you can sand that too. If you're going to be using that, or if there's a reason to sand it, like it needs to be cemented or glued or something, but there are degrees of correcting. So I think that, I mean, speaking from what we do at Horween, we do correct leather, but it tends to be less extreme than maybe what you would find other places in the world, because we're using finer grit sandpaper. So
it's more like a polish or...
Yeah, so your analogy, I think, is correct there, because we're not taking away all of the grain. We're just sort of leveling it out and making it kind of like, it's almost like you said, like a polishing. But you can use, you know, coarser grit sandpaper and take the grain completely off.
You can make that surface of the moon into like a cue ball.
Yeah. Eventually, not just through sanding, but yeah, I mean, because you could make it like it's like a nubuck then, or a micro suede, where there's no grain left.
I've seen... It'll get a little contentious here, but I've seen the word full grain being used in marketing language to sell product, implying that it has some sort of inherent value that is more significant or more superior to something that's not full grain. I mean, what's your take on that? I have some opinions, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think more of the characteristic comes from maybe the tanning itself. You know, what's stronger or what's smoother, what's gonna...
Because it depends on what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the tannage and the retannage. You do need the highest or the nicest or the cleanest raw material. So it tends to be costly, but you can tan full grain, make a full grain leather that's terrible, and make a corrected grain leather that's amazing. I mean, it really depends on what you're doing and if you're doing it right. There's just so many different ways to tan. But I think that in general, full grain leather tends to be less finished because you're trying to showcase the grain anyway. So I think that it's not necessarily that leather is going to do something different than other leathers do if they were tanned the same way, but it lends itself to a different or to a more specific or narrower type of tannage, which tends to age better because there's less covering it up, which means less pigment, which means less stuff getting in the way of, you know, the daily stuff that's going to add patina and age it down.
So I'm trying to think of a way to add value to somebody that's in the market for a jacket or gloves or shoes or boots or whatever. I mean, when somebody sees the word full grain in a car ad or something, they're talking about their beautiful aniline full grain leather seats, a lot of marketing spins and just words that I think are thrown out there to raise up the perceived value of whatever they're selling. When somebody sees these words, what do you suggest to them to think about?
There are words that you can put on leather products that don't really, I mean, they just don't really mean much, especially anymore, but we talk about, or in this, just the definitions of full grain. If you just Google.
Oh yeah. Let's pull that up.
Like full grain leather. This is the first result. Full grain leather simply means the hair is removed and the hide goes immediately into the tanning process, which is just not correct.
This is the number one Google.
It's
result.
Bold on Google. It's just not. I mean, the hair is removed and the hide goes immediately into the tanning process, literally for every single leather on the planet. So it's way jumping the gun. I mean, it just means the hair is removed and the hide goes immediately into the tanning process, and then nothing is done to the grain during the finishing process. I mean, I guess it just needs a lot of
massaging
to even be remotely correct.
I was trying to see if there's like a Wikipedia entry, because usually, I mean, I know enough about leather to know if something's nonsense, but let's see what Wikipedia says.
That's a lot better.
Yeah, you see, yeah. Wikipedia. All right. Wikipedia says full grain leather contains the entire grain layer without any removal of the surface. But I think the real important question is like, who cares?
Also, right? and then the next sentence is totally dubious. Rather than wearing out, it develops a patina during its useful lifetime, which, you know, it could.
Depends if it you depends. Finish it and it de- it totally what's de- in the leather
and what you're using it for. That's a pretty loosey goosey. But anyway, yeah. So there's a lot of misinformation, I think, about, you know, and it's like, you know, people see genuine leather, which doesn't really mean that much. I mean, that could be any leather. I mean, that's full grain, that's top grain, so that's leather that's been corrected. That's splits, which are leather that don't have any grain at all, which are suede on both sides.
You know who I trust for my leather source is businessinsider.com.
Yeah, they know a lot.
Would you like to know? would you like to know what Business Insider has to say?
I shouldn't laugh until I actually read.
Well, yeah, they might be like completely right.
Maybe they got although
title.
Not to trash anyone, but that those shoes look terrible.
Oh no! Don't do it, Nick. You went there. Why everything you thought you knew about buying quality leather is wrong. Usually found on the underside of a belt or inside a leather good, a product's leather quality will be stamped one of three things: genuine leather, top grain leather, or full grain leather. But what exactly do these terms mean? When you're buying your fancy leather briefcase, jacket, or shoes, you should know exactly what to look for in your leather. Since a cowhide is so thick, the layers are often cut and used to make different products. What do you take about this first section here, Nick, before we go on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... I mean, they're already misleading people, and not even on purpose. Like, since a cowhide is so thick, I mean, so a cowhide
is thinner than
a steer. Not that thick, but a steer hide is pretty thick. But not all steer hides are thick because it, you know, things are different thicknesses because it's a natural product. So I mean, they're already slipping out.
What they're trying to get at with this last paragraph here. Is they're trying to say that they're going to splits. They're going to talk about splits. When they talk about layers of leather are used to make different products, that's not the reason that a tannery is creating that byproduct of a split, right? You see where they're going with this? They're saying because the hide is thick, the layers are cut and used to make different products. It's like not...
It's not incorrect, but it's not...
That's not the motivation.
No, it's not.
All right. Continuing on, genuine leather doesn't just mean the product is made of real leather, which it is, but it also means it is the lowest quality of all products made out of real leather. Basically, you should read it as, at least it's genuine leather. Genuine leather doesn't last as long or look as nice as higher quality leather. You'll typically find it in belts from mall stores, shoes from lower priced department stores, and bags or other goods in a lower price range. Goods marked as genuine leather will be several layers of low-quality leather bonded together with glue and then painted to look uniform. It's made from what is left over when the other higher grades are stripped away for pricier projects.
See, that's not...
This is like all actually wrong.
I mean, it's partially true, but it's not that way across the board. I think that... I mean, you look at a tannery like Stead, like CF Stead in the UK. I mean, their leather is genuine leather technically because not all of it, because they do top grain and full grain stuff too. But, you know, a suede, the way they do it, a split suede, you could only define under these three terms, it would be genuine leather because there's no top grain, there's no full grain. But I mean, that leather is some of the best.
It's really nice.
In the world. I mean, it's a...
But they're also conflating the notion of a split, which we know is a split. But they're implying that a split is genuine leather. But they're also saying it has to be bonded leather, which is like a completely different thing.
It's a different thing. Yeah, and a split, to define what a split is, it happens, depending on the process and the formulation of the tannery, at least once. But a hide is split to make its thickness more uniform, or to get it down to a prescribed thickness. So it's kind of hard to describe, but think about the piece of leather being fed sort of the long way, the skinny way, flat against the knife. And then so the leather's going in a way, sort of very unnatural way, and being held in place by rollers. And then you can set the gap and where the knife is inside that gap, And then you end up on the top, you end up with the full grain part, which is the thickness that you want. And that comes out uniform. And then whatever that the difference is falls away off the bottom. And that's a split and it's swayed on both sides. And that weight on that, at least at that point, is not consistent because it's just whatever the difference is between what it started as and what you want it to be.
That's a long way of saying it's the byproduct of thinning down the grain layer to a consistent thickness. Yeah.
That's true. But I mean, and it depends how granular you want to get, but there's shaving too, which is another way of thinning down. And then you end up with shavings, which aren't usable. I mean, I guess you can bond them, but
you can make bonded leather.
Yeah. But the split is considerably has more utility to it, at least when the split is thick enough to be, you know, big enough to make products out of.
So I don't know if you have this information, but I assume that Stead is purchasing suedes from a tannery like yourself. I don't think they're buying from you, but they'll buy it from as a byproduct of another tannery and then tan that again into their awesome suedes.
That's my understanding. I think that from what I've heard, and I don't think I'm giving away any trade secrets, but they spend, I think that a very important part of their business is sourcing really high quality splits, thick splits that are thick in terms of what's available and then bigger in size. You know, they think that they want, from what I've heard, they want whole hide stuff. I could be wrong on that, but they want big, thick, you know, well chrome tanned, generally splits because it's, as is the case with most leather tanning. I mean, the quality of the raw material, especially the hide itself. I mean, if you don't have a good canvas, end product isn't going to be any good either. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do to it.
I sort of make the analogy to a home. It's like, if you don't have a good foundation, it doesn't matter what you build above it. It's like, it's going to all fall down. That's how I perceive some of the leather stuff to be with all the different steps. Getting off topic there, but what's bonded leather? Maybe you could describe that.
It just means it's been glued. I mean, it could be most of what I understand it to be is it's like plywood where you're actually grinding it up and then gluing it back together as sort of a flexible substrate. And then I think it can have layers or not have layers depending on what it's being used for. But I mean, I agree that it's a useful product because I think it's, you know, being an industry of byproducts, I think it's important to use as much of the product at each stage as you can.
As much as the skin as you can.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea is to not throw stuff away. I mean, we do as much as we can to use as much of it as we can. I mean, that's what the hide is. The hide is a byproduct.
I'm going
to
admit something. I think I've been fooled by, I mean, you have to look pretty close, but I've been fooled by some bonded stuff. It to me looks like a corrected, like a print assist kind of leather. Mm-hmm. And people might not know what that is, but if you take a corrected grain leather where you really smooth down the surface with sandpaper and then apply heavy pigments or resins even, and then impress or emboss a texture onto it, like a hair cell to make it look like grain. I've been fooled by some bonded stuff before, but then you look closer, you can kind of tell, but it's pretty, if I'm honest, it's like good enough.
Yeah, I think that, and this is a tangent, but I think that in leather goods in general, that the technology and the techniques and specifically like the finishing has gotten so good out in the world. And there are so many different products because they're making developments all the time that I think that the genuine leather, bonded leather stuff actually can look really good on the shelf. And then as soon as you put 3 or 4 months of wear onto it and you hold it side by side with something that's, you know, full grain or not bonded. And I think it becomes a product life cycle thing too. I mean, it's because you've got, you know, a piece of real leather is a single piece and then bonded leather is glued together. I mean, at some point that glue becomes a weakness. And so it's not going to hold up. But I think that you're right. And I think that, and this is even further tangent, I think that from a merchandising standpoint, that people can get themselves in trouble by putting stuff that looks similar together on the shelf and not giving themselves a chance to describe why things are different prices, even though they can look similar in the store.
What do you mean?
Well, like I've been into retailers that will remain nameless, but, and I'll go in and like, they'll have their black dress shoe display and they'll have a pair of Shell Cordovan shoes and they'll have a pair of calf shoes. And then they'll have a pair of, you know, entry level black leather dress shoes, like side by side on the shelf, you know, and the Shell shoes are $700 and the calf shoes are similar, maybe a little bit less. And then the entry level shoes are $150. And on the shelf, they look, you know, side by side. You're looking at them like, why would I spend $700 when these look the same?
Yeah, for a layperson.
Yeah, yeah. To this person who doesn't really have a specific thing they're looking for. So that's what I'm saying. Like on the shelf, things can be deceptive, I guess. But, you know, take 10 steps and then they're looking to look different. It doesn't even take months.
I'm just going to keep going down this list because we're getting to the namesake of our show here, which is the full grain leather. But next up is top grain leather. It is the grade of leather you'll find in fine leather goods and can be considered the middle of the road quality of leather.
You should just stop reading. I just read ahead. Just please. It's so general. It's such a
top grain leather is used in the vast majority of purses for women, as well as small leather goods for men, like wallets that are sold by well-known designer brands. It's made by splitting a piece of full grain leather and sanding away any imperfections in the hide and stamping a fake grain on it. Usually it's then treated and colored to provide a completely uniform look. The finished product ends up being a bit plastic-like and not nearly as durable as the best quality leather, full grain. The name
of the show. That's such a problem.
It will not age well with use and will end up looking old and worn after a time. The finish of the leather is great, however, if you don't care as much about durability and more about the color of your leather item, or its resistance to stain, as it has been heavily treated. You kind of talked about some of these things, and I know these four paragraphs make you very upset.
They do.
But I had to read the whole thing.
As a child of leather.
leather baby.
Grew up in a tannery, but it's just so... And I don't know how we got to picking on and using this article.
Business Insider.
Yeah, as our stepping off point, but I like it. It's good.
I mean, it was the first Google result, yeah. So.
I mean, just to completely dispel all of this in a single example. So one of the leather, I mean, we make a couple different versions of a leather that's called mechanical leather, which is relatively simple to make. It's a fat liquored leather, which means it gets its nourishment from inside of the retanning process. It's oils and greases, but that leather can be corrected or not, but it doesn't really matter because it's used for mechanical purposes, meaning historically like engine oil seals, which is like one of the most physically demanding things that you could do to pressurize something and then have it keep, you know, you have to keep pressure in, and that's doesn't need to be full grain. I mean, and that leather is as strong as anything that we make, it's a super durable piece of leather. So this is just a problem because, you know, top grain is not like we talked about before. I mean, there are different degrees of correcting. So as soon as you do anything to the leather, you know, technically it's top grain. As soon as you sandpaper it at all, it's top grain.
That's exactly what I think I'm translating this. Their top grain means corrected grain in our brains.
Yeah, but I mean,
they're also wrong about what it means.
They can be the same. I mean, they can be the same thing, but it's just not. It's very specific. It's taking a very specific example and saying that all of that is top grain. I mean, the example of what they're saying could be top grain, but there's so many different ways to make top grain leather that aren't this, that are nice, that lasts a long time, that age well, and it's just not,
because in my mind full grain leather is a top grain leather. It's everything that's not the split. Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah. So top grain, all full grain leather is top grain, but not all top grain leather, but no top grain leather is full grain.
Wait, no, that's not, yeah, right.
So it goes, it's like you're going up the pyramid. So like full, there's like all, so there's full let me start over here. So top grain, full grain leather. Jesus Christ.
Start with the no, all, no.
All full grain leather is top grain, but top grain leather is not necessarily full grain. Because I mean, you could take a full grain leather and turn it into top grain, but you can't go the other way around. Once it's been buffed and you're calling it top grain, you can't make it full grain again.
I think this word here, top, is where that's a positive sort of spin sort of vibe. So people go, oh, that's the top. That's the best. I think that actually came from a tannery, which meant it was the top of the knife in the splitting machine. And they just took that word and ran with it for a century or whatever. I mean, we're going to keep going down here. I see your blood boiling. Full grain leather. Full grain leather takes the entire grain of the hide with all the imperfections and inherent toughness of the material. It also looks like they edited this. I'm going to just highlight this because it looks like a different font. So it looks like they like went in and tried to fix this from here.
I'm just reading ahead.
I'm reading to you.
I just want to lay down.
I've gotten really good at reading Good Night Moon. I've got to memorize front and back.
Yeah, no, that's good.
It's often okay. Full grain leather is often used for heavy duty leather items like weapon holsters and utility belts, but it can also be used with great success for dress belts, briefcases, dress shoes, work boots, and numerous other leather goods. This type of leather is often naturally marked with imperfections from the animal, like a brand or a scar, but products from pricier companies won't use these flawed hides, making it even more expensive. Full grain is hard as nails and will develop a rich patina as it ages, looking more and more beautiful as you use it. It's widely recognized as the best and highest quality leather money can buy. Often much more expensive, full grain pays dividends with its durability. If you invest in an item made with full grain leather, you will probably have that item for the rest of your life if you take care of it properly. So let's pick this apart, Nick. I see you're steaming. Nick's getting upset.
I mean, the trend continues with the article, I guess. But I mean, it's not necessarily incorrect, but they're making it seem like that's what full grain leather is.
I'm going to interrupt you. By the way, I'm pretty sure this bag here is corrected.
Nice.
We're not
going to talk about that.
Nobody can see that screen right now, so they have no idea.
I started to lean back in my chair and glaze over when it was the often used for heavy duty items like holsters and utility belts. Like that's the primary use. Like that's so far down the road when you talk about belts and shoes, and it's backwards. But
it also has no full grain has no impact on the durability necessarily.
I
could be wrong.
Yeah, I think that generally that the durability that people are going to experience is going to come from the tannage itself and whatever the base tannage is, whether that's chrome or vegetable. Which we can get into another time,
we should get into veg tan when we get to this paragraph because they're conflating the characteristics of veg tan with patina.
But I mean the grain is the strongest part of the hide.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it has and it's the most abrasion resistant and it has the most strength.
Can you describe the? Do you know the layers name like corium and all that?
Let's I don't. I'm not.
You're not a leather scientist.
It's one of those things that I've learned and read probably 100 times.
Well, we'll look at this image here.
It keeps going in and then out.
This seems to be the example I'm talking about here, but you're saying the grain on the top here, maybe this illustration would be helpful for people too.
Yeah. Yeah. It shows because the fibers are the most tightly packed and on the very surface because as you start to get down, there's more space in between them, which just means, it's just not as dense, so there's it's not as strong as a raw material. But a lot of that can be remedied by, again, the tannage and retannage. Because the retannage specifically, if you look at that picture, the picture here of the corium, which is kind of like a jumble of, it's like a pile of leaves that are kind of evenly spaced out. I mean, all that empty space is what we're filling in when we're tanning. So we want to make sure that there's no voids in there because that's what's going to give leather strength.
I want to give you know who your chef, by the way, Nick's a chef. If you guys didn't know,
I used to
like a legit chef cook. Do you go by cook or chef, Nick?
I neither.
Do you know who Elton Brown is?
Yes.
All right. He's awesome. He had a thing about, he was talking like spaghetti or something, and it sort of reminded me of tanning. If you imagine the corium is like, once you drain out your spaghetti and you got this like colander or whatever of just like noodles that are sort of, they're kind of sticky together, but they're not held in place. I always think about that bowl of noodles, thinking about leather tanning, is you're fixing all those little strands, all those noodles together, and filling in the voids with tannins, like tree barks and things like that. So continue on with your example here. I actually kind of like this.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, I think that, I mean, what you were saying, I think is correct. I just think that the full grain, the grain part of it is, I mean, if you were to have something that was corrected and something that was full grain and then tan them exactly the same way, the full grain piece of leather would hold up better because it's more abrasion resistant, stronger. But
see, I guess I didn't really know that. And your dad taught me that this week or last week, I suppose, he taught me that the equine hides, the horse hides, have a tougher grain, which I didn't really understand. Maybe you could help me understand that. Like, he was saying it's abrasion resistant.
Right.
So if you give me an example of where you would see that benefit.
Jackets.
Yeah. That's why so many jackets are made in horse.
Well, I mean, I think that this is another tangent maybe, but I think that a lot of jackets, I think that horse hide was actually a secondary jacket material when it was adopted. I think that sheep, and if I remember my history properly, which is dubious, but sheep and goat were generally preferred for jackets, but during, especially like during war times when they were making so many jackets, there just wasn't enough. So horse hide actually came in as like a lower cost and a substitute material. But
World War II.
I think I should be more sure of these things when I talk about them, and it's being recorded, but that's someone's probably screaming. Like, there's so many people that are jacket collectors and they're probably all screaming, or whoever the two jacket collectors that are listening to this are probably screaming at me, but yeah, I mean, it's still a traditional material, but I think that that's sort of the genesis of that as a product. But I think that it's tough and it ages really well. So I think that
Saying, given the same components of a tannage put into two hides, one being equine and one being bovine, you will have a tougher grain and more abrasion resistance on the horse hide.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
See, this is news. I'm still learning. And I think it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting about this diagram, and pulled back up, is I think about, as a leather crafter myself, we want thin pieces of leather often for most of our designs and patterns, making wallets and small leather goods and things. So for us, it's really important to not remove too much of the corium, because we tend to see it loses a lot of strength, a lot of slit tear strength, and it just rips. The leather rips when you thin down the leather too far. And I think of this, like, this diagram's a really great visual representation of the network of how these fibers all work together. So when you start to cut one of them down, like if you start to get into this top section of the corium, there's really like nothing in my mind that holds it together. And this is where I think a lot of customers come to me with a wallet that's fallen apart. Hey, look at this. It's exploded is the words they use. And I see it. They have a leather wallet that may or may not have been called like genuine or top grain or whatever. And they'll come in and I'll take a look at it. And what it always is really, really, really thin leather that's been laminated to some non-leather backer. And it's always the leather that's failed because it's got nothing to it. It just, you can breathe on it and it sort of rips apart. That's a pet peeve for me. So,
yeah, I think that, I mean, I talked about the grain being the strongest part, but it's only part of the, like, the package. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, even at the tannery, we don't buy super thick hides to make them into thin hides because you compromise the strength. I mean, you want to buy something that's, I mean, for not only for cost purposes, I mean, for keeping the price to the customer down, but also for performance purposes, you want to buy stuff that's as close to the finished weight as you can, without, giving yourself trouble through the actual manufacturing process. But yeah, so you want to look at it as kind of like a package. And I mean, I can't think of it of a super great example. I mean, maybe like if you think of like a corrugated cardboard, where like the that as a whole unit, it's hard to rip the cardboard. But if you were just to peel off the top layer, then you just have a piece of paper and you can tear it. So it's kind of like,
that's a really good example.
You're trying to, it's kind of like the, you know, you're looking at all the layers, or like trying to tear a magazine. You know, it's like the more layers that you have, and that's not a great example either. But
no, I think it's not a network of fibers, but that's a similar idea.
Yeah.
They're all working together.
Right.
Well, what can we do to summarize this here? I mean, I'll give you my quick summary, and I would really like to hear your take on these terms. But for me, it all depends. Like, what are you doing? What are you going to make out of it? Are you making a football, like a football leather for your hat, or football leather to actually put a bladder inside and inflate? I think you're going to need different, not only grain characters or even parts of the hide, but it might actually be cheaper to buy a split if you're going to use it on a hat and just make it look like football, because you don't need a lot of strength. So to me, it depends on the function that you're looking to get. And then it depends on if you like it. Do you like the way full grain leather looks? Like, my dad doesn't necessarily care. He likes a little bit of a flatter, shinier, smoother thing. He might like shell. But, you know, he doesn't really like that super grainy look either. So it's not necessarily better, right? I mean, what's your take?
No, I think you nailed it. I think that, you know, the first question that I always ask if there's a customer that's coming in that wants to start doing some, you know, buying, you know, placing some orders, or even an existing customer, is what are you making? Because I mean, first of all, we have a stupid number of products in line right now. We make way too many things, but that's besides the point. But we, you know, different tannages and different thicknesses and different hide types, they all suit different things. So yeah, it's what are you making? I mean, because you can, you know, a thin split suede for the heel counter of a shoe is perfect. I mean, you don't need to have a full grain piece of leather in that spot. You might not even want one anyway, because you want something that's going to give you some more friction, that's going to hold your heel in place. So it's what are you, you know, what's the end use of the leather? But yeah, I think that it's, you know, as with almost everything in, you know, in your world and retail, and finished products, is, you know, it's whatever the customer wants, it resonates. And there's the on the shelf thing, and then there's what it's going to look like, you know, 6 months from now or 2 years from now. And some people want to buy something that's going to look the same in 2 years as when they bought it. And then that's, you know, that person might want something that's a top grain leather that has a super heavy finish on it, because it's not going to change. But the, you know, someone else might want something that's going to show scratches, and then, you know, they can polish it and buff it out, and sort of that becomes part of the leather's journey and changes over time. So I think it just totally depends on, you know, what's being made and who it's being made for.
Well, we demystified three important terms: full grain, top grain. What were the other ones? These are like terms I don't even use.
We either demystified or created more confusion.
It is confusing. That's the thing. Well, I want to make the point here that you can have good all of it. So do you have a favorite full grain leather, and maybe a favorite non-full grain leather? I'll keep it that simple.
Oh.
Or talk about some of your favorite full grains. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of what we do at Horween is full grain. So I mean, there's a lot to choose from, but the Dublin range is pretty hard to beat in my mind. It's full grain, it's waxed, it's got the same stuff in it that we use in the tanning of the shell cordovan. So it's got, there's a lot of history there, a lot of tried and true methods, and it ages great. And it's strong for a veg, which is what it is. But
see, why does it, that's one thing I wanted to get into. Sorry, going back to this article, why does it age nicely? These people say full grain, if it's full grain, it's going to give you a great patina, but that's not necessarily true.
It's not. Yeah, it depends on what the retan is mostly. Well, not mostly, in large part. And then how it's finished and what color it is too. I mean, it has bearing on too, but
it needs tree barks in my experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. To give you a good patina, you need some tree.
I would agree with that. I think that, I mean, that's definitely.
And to clarify for people listening, veg tan leather means that there's trees in it, tree barks in it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, it's just, it means that there are like tannins that are used in the tanning process. And the most common place to get those is from trees, tree bark.
So you like the Dublin because it gives a great patina because of the tree barks. It's tan like shell. Sorry, go back.
Yeah, I think that we get the color range is nice. I mean, it's still like everything, almost everything we make at Horween, it's mostly earth tones. It's still, I mean, we can still get nice colors out of it, and it ages down really well. It holds up really well. It's consistent enough that people can make a lot of different stuff out of it, but it does show also all the natural character in it. So it has, I mean, each product that's made out of it has sort of, is unique. I mean, at the end of the day, it's unique because it's a naturally occurring product. But if I had to pick one sort of currently, that would be one. And then top grain.
Oh, it doesn't have to be top grain, just not
full grain.
Not full grain.
I mean, you could get tricky and say shell cordovan.
There's no grain.
Because there's no grain.
It's gone. I think that's split off.
Well, I mean,
it's shaved off.
The flesh is shaved off. I mean, the grain is there on the opposite side mostly, but it's kind of full grain, but you don't use the grain. That's a tricky answer, so I'm not going to use that as my answer. So I think...
Tell me you're going to use the C word. Are you going to do it? Yes. All right. We're on the same page then.
The highly contested pronunciation of the word chamois.
Chamois,
depending on what part of the country or world you're from. But I mean, there's that leather, and then there's the derivatives of it. There's the waterproof versions, and then there's the oiled and waxed versions. But it's a oiled nubuck to call what it is. But you know, you can use both sides of it. It polishes like crazy. Again, earth tones, but I think that I like the colors, the way they turn out. I think that
that's a vegery tan too.
Yep.
Yeah, that's where you get the aging from.
Yeah, but and then the dark colors come from the oiling, but the oiling is also what gives it that sort of that heavy feel, and also the polishing aspect of it comes from the oiling. But yeah, I mean there are lesser known versions of that product too that are out there that I think are great too. Like, people might not even know, but like Outrigger is one, which is like a waxed version. And yeah. Adirondack is the waxed and waterproof version. And it's just a variations on a theme, but I think that's a great sort of tried and true, very traditional product that we do that turns out well. And of course you ask me these questions and they're all going to be answers from the stuff that I make.
Yeah. I mean, I also asked you for one product of each, and you gave me a bunch. I think you're illustrating the point that you make a lot of different stuff.
Okay, fine. Dublin and chamois.
Podcast over.
Yeah. See you next time.
See you later. And I think there's probably going to be some leather crafters that listen to this. You were talking about brighter colors on Dublin. You're right. That wax layer on the surface darkens it up quite a bit. It gives it a good burst. I've seen some nice brighter colors on a derivative or variant on the Dublin called Essex. So you can get some bright, like the bold orange Essex is pretty bright. Mm-hmm. There's that red, and you can do any colors. I would suggest people go towards the Essex route if they want brighter shades. Having said that, we do for Ashland, English Tan Dublin is by far our best seller by like a lot. So Dublin's a great, it's a hit. All right, speaking of hits, we're going to go talk about J.R. Rendenbach, although this is sort of like a bummer instead of a hit.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think it's telling in terms of what's going on in the industry, especially now.
Well, headline is J.R. Rendenbach. This is not headline news. I mean, headline news a year ago, because in October 2021, Rendenbach, a.k.a. J.R. Leather Soles, they announced that they're closing down. What's the story here, Nick?
I mean, as I understand it, and I haven't talked to Mr. Rendenbach in a while, but the tannery, I mean, they're older than we are. I mean, they started in 1871, and their process is even more time-consuming than a lot of our processes. I mean, they take up to a year to make their stuff. But I don't think, and I hope I'm not, putting out false information, but I'm not sure that there was anyone that wanted to continue that business the way he was running in terms of like a, it was a family business. I'm not sure that there was an, if he had another family member that wanted to do what he was doing. I mean, it's a tough, tanning is a tough business when things are good. I mean, it's tricky. I mean, it's finicky and you're subject to, you know, animals more or less that as your raw material, as your primary input to your raw material. So, or your finished product, I mean. So,
well, let me back you up here. Why do you think it is that every shoe boot forum I go to, everybody knows JR Souls? Why do you think that is? It's like a Horween, you know, Horween, yeah. People know the name of a tannery. That's not like a common thing.
Yeah. So the tannage that they do that's so long, I mean, it's not doing it faster isn't better necessarily. I mean, I'm not going to say it's worse across the board either, but I mean, there's a reason to keep doing something the way they, you know, the old fashioned way. I mean, cause a lot of times it is better. The problem is it costs more and takes longer. And there are all kinds of business related problems that come along with those two things. You have more inventory longer and, stuff is more expensive to his customer. And then to the end customer ends up being more expensive. And, you know, can people tell the difference? I mean, that's a big thing.
It seems like they can. I mean, people are calling out JR by name. They're mm-hmm. asking for resoles and the
some
JR
people.
And
I mean, people that know, but
people
I think
appreciate
that,
it.
Yeah, I think that people that know what they're looking for do, and they understand that it's worth, you know, worth the extra, you know, whatever dollars in your shoes if you want your, you know, they're going to last longer. But I just think of, and this is. Look at a tanner brain, but like if you have a, like let's say you're tanning it and it's a year long tannage and you put it in and you do, let's say the new guy puts it in and he does something just a little bit wrong. And then you find out literally a year later that it's garbage.
Hmm.
And then how much product do you have coming in behind that was done the same way by the new guy that's also garbage
for a year? Yeah.
So I mean, it's a risky proposition sometimes to make a product that takes such a long time to make because, you know, you don't know, you don't get that feedback through the manufacturing process of what's going on. So I think that it's a deceptively tricky business.
You know, tanning. Know a little bit about long tanages.
I do.
Yeah. It's my understanding that they're sort of, I've never worn a JR sole. Have you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Yeah. You like it?
They're good. They take some time to break in, but once they do, I mean, they're great.
Yeah. It was my understanding that it's like top tier for outsoles. Speaking of outsoles, I haven't worn the JR and I don't know if I can anymore, right? Did somebody try to recreate their tannage?
So I hope the flow of information is getting to me correctly and in a timely manner, but I think that
it's been a year, Nick.
Yeah, I know.
Spoiler alert. This is not news.
Spoiler alert. There's another German tannery that has the formulas that's taken over, that's tanning the leather, at least to the way the formulas tell them to. So I have not seen the new stuff from the new tannery. I guess you could assume that the new stuff would just be coming out because it's been about a year, right? So if they're following the formula as it's been, and full disclosure, I'm not sure all their Rendenbach stuff takes that long because I think that they probably have different options inside their range, but you know, the year long stuff, I mean, it's been that long. So, I mean, maybe we haven't even seen it yet. So I don't know.
I don't think people would appreciate either. And I've spent a couple of years in manufacturing, but I don't think people, especially in like an old world technology, like the tannery that you're in, I don't think people have a full appreciation for the facility itself and the water source, for example, can play a really dramatic part in the product. So I'd be curious to see, you know, I don't know how far away this other German tannery is, but I'd be curious to see how the resulting outsoles are. I do want to try one of those. I bet you could find some outsoles.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still around. I mean, I hope they're great. I mean, the old ones from the original tannery were great. I hope the new ones are great too. I mean, it would be a shame for that product to go away.
Well, the reason I wanted to try them is because I've been over the last 2 years or so. Pandemic. It's a pandemic length of time. I found a real appreciation for leather outsoles. And I know I'm a leather guy. Like, I like leather, but I actually find them to be more pleasant and enjoyable to wear. They're just comfortable. And again, like, I've only tried, I don't even know who makes the leather for them. These ones from Oak Street. And I have some leather outsoles from Allen Edmonds. I have some leather outsoles from Old Florsheim's. I have some leather outsoles from Grantstone. And they all tend to be my most comfortable.
The Allen Edmonds might be Rennenbach.
Yeah. They're old AE stuff.
I don't know. I'd have to.
Yeah. But I've been digging outsoles. I'm going to pick on my buddy George, which from Oak Street. So hopefully he can come on the show too. But those outsoles, I wore some Oak Street Bootmaker Natural Chrome XL trench boots with leather bottoms for the Stitch on Patina Thunderdome, which, by the way, I think they're doing another. I don't know if I'm going to do it. I don't know if I could spend more money in boots.
I don't know what I'm going to wear yet, but
yeah, I think I'll do it. You got to do it. Anyways, I found them to be terribly comfortable, and then they just wore through so fast. It felt like the same outsole that was on Thousand Mile boots, like very, very thin and very soft, like more oiled or something. And I think that's why they were also comfortable. They wore out very fast, because maybe that's part of it. Anyways, I've been digging leather soles, so I'd like to try some JRs.
That's fast.
I mean, wore them every day for the Thunderdome.
I still think that's kind of fast. Yeah. I guess it depends what you're doing and where you're going and what you're walking on. And
well, we're in the city here, so yeah, there's like a lot of asphalt and a lot of concrete, which is like unpleasant for soles.
Winter too.
Whereas on a day-night sole, you helped me get some day-night soles on some Vibergs, and I can't even tell that they're worn. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're tough.
They're also tough. Not as comfortable, in my opinion.
Yeah, different. I mean, different. Yeah, I was.
Oh,
it's so subjective. Yeah.
You wrote in the notes here, Formula Now Tan by Kilger Leather, and they were founded in 1856.
They're even older, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's some old German tanneries. As evidenced by our tanner, the plant manager, plant superintendent, tanner, chemist, he's all those things at
Horween.
At Horween,
yeah.
Is seventh generation, eighth generation tanner. Like his dad was a tanner, and it goes all. I mean,
Once you get past three, that's like a lot.
Yeah. So and his family still has a tannery in Germany. Which I think is even older than 1856. I should know. It's like, it's amazing. But
is there like a historical relevance to Germany and tanning?
I mean, they just are good at stuff.
We should do an episode on like tanning origins, because I think the Cordovan is like Spain. Yeah.
Yeah. The story is, and I was pulling a bunch of old archival stuff today actually so we could read through it and talk about it at some point. But they were saying, and this is a typewritten Horween lore from like the 1960s. So who knows like what was going on, but that originated in Spain and then sort of perfected in Germany. And then I guess perfected in Germany and then adapted to the more modern footwear world in the United States.
You're talking about Shell Cordovan.
Shell Cordovan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Cordovan, because it wasn't necessarily used specifically for the shell when it began, but
it's Spiegelware. It's like mirror goods or something. Yeah. We'll do an episode on
there's a deep dive there for sure.
Shell Cordovan origins.
We should.
All right. Well, let's go into favorites. Do you want to start on favorites?
Go ahead.
You want me to go? All right. Well, I haven't thought about it too much. Actually, I wanted to talk about a book. I've got this thing recently. And I don't know if I've ever talked to you about like trouble sleeping. Maybe TMI here for the audience, but I think a lot. I get like crazy anxiety because there's so much stuff I'm interested in, so many things I want to do. So when I would lay down and go to bed, I would just start like my mind would be like waterfall after waterfall of concepts of like things that I want to do tomorrow, or like what did I do today that I should have done different. I don't know. I get this like weird anxiety thing. To the point where years ago, I used to have to take like a sleeping medicine because I couldn't fall asleep. But what's really interesting is nowadays I found a great sleeping medicine, and it's audiobooks and AirPods. These guys right here. I go to, this is in my ear 12 hours a day. So I go to bed with the noise canceling AirPods, putting on an audiobook. And the thing I've been listening to, I've actually listened to it multiple times, because it turns out when you fall asleep to an audiobook, you like forget where you were. So I think you've read this book too, or listened to it, Project Hail Mary. And it's the author, gosh, what's his name? The guy that wrote The Martian, which is also a great book and good, really good movie. Andy Weir is the author. Did you just find it?
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
I can't believe I forgot it. So I've listened to it a bunch, and it's a really fun, like, it's like a fun, like, friend, like, unlikely friend book, where, like, if it was a kid's book, it would be like dog makes friends with a cat and they like have an adventure. It's that, and it's very charming. I really enjoyed it. So if people like space, like I do, man, like Interstellar, it's like so awesome. if you like space at all, or if you like The Martian, this was a good, I thought it was a good book, like a hard sci-fi kind of thing. What do you got?
That's a good book. I listened to it once because I didn't do it when I was sleeping, so I only had to listen to it once.
it's worth multiple listens.
Yeah, but
By the way, on Audible, they do a really good represent. Like, I feel like the experience on the audiobook could have only been done on the audiobook. The narrator's really good, so recommend the audiobook as opposed to actually reading it. Sorry, go ahead.
And go to audible.com/fullgrain for your. I've been sort of taking a little bit of a meander through the audio output world, due to some things that are on our heads, which we'll talk about, I think, later. But I didn't know much about the world other than it was complicated and that people were very discerning, but
audio output, like headphones, and amps and stuff.
Yeah. Just, well, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Audio output world is like, what does that mean?
Like headphones,
car audio.
Yeah. Like specifically, over the ear headphones, which is what's on her head. But, I went through a bunch of stuff and then, learned about audio amps a little bit and converters. And I found a company called JDS Labs, which is in Illinois, and they make some of the components in Chicago even. And I just think it's a well-done product that makes a difference for headphones, for high-end headphones. So I think it's, I don't know how big they are. I mean, the stuff when I ordered it was back ordered, so that's great. I hope they're doing well. But jdslabs.com. And
you're plugging people.
Interesting.
Are they sponsored too?
They should be. But I just think it's having gone through a bunch of stuff and then looking for something simple. I've been appreciating that product. I mean, partially because it's not a lot of stuff on my desk and it's a prominent thing on my desk. But
I want to come cool listen stuff. To that. Yeah.
All simple, right. Simple, but cool. Well thought out, I think.
Yeah, maybe next time we do this, you could bring it. All right, I'll come by.
I'll bring it.
All right, well.
It's small enough to bring.
Thanks, everybody, for checking out the show today. And this is, of course, we don't actually have sponsors, which is great for you because you don't have to listen to any ads. we do like the stuff we're actually talking about are things that we actually like. In fact, like if we do have a sponsor, if we ever get one, like I'd prefer it would be something I like.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. We'll
plug Ashland Leather.
Today is sponsored by Ashland Leather and Horween Leather. And we want to hear from you guys too. So anybody that's listening to this, if you want to drop us an email, give us some comments. Like, what do you guys want to talk about? We have a lot of things that we could talk about without your feedback, but it'd be more interesting for us to provide some value directly to you guys. So things that you want to talk about, even if you think we might not know about it and you want our take on it, we'd be interested to chat about it. Or if there's somebody you want to hear from, if you want us to have a guest on, which we will have guests, maybe even the next episode we'll have a guest. We'd love to hear questions and comments from everybody, you can send an email to fullgrainpodcast@gmail.com. All right.
Oh, yes.
We did it. Thanks again for another episode, Nick.
See you guys next time.